All right, pleasant good morning to each of you again. I'm just so thankful to be in the assembly this morning with all of you and to sing these songs with our brother and pray together and praise together. And in a few moments, we will partake of two emblems that will remind us of the importance of this first day. And I'm glad to share it with you. And I thank you so much for inviting me to be a part of your assembly today and throughout the first part of this week, and I certainly look forward to it. Turn in your Bibles, if you will, to Exodus chapter 3. Exodus chapter 3, and beginning in verse 1. And as we read this text this morning in Exodus 3, I'm going to tell you in advance, as soon as you go there, you're going to think, well, I know this. And you do. But let's look at it again. Exodus 3, beginning in verse 1. Now Moses was pasturing the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the west side of the wilderness and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. The angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, and yet the bush was not consumed. So Moses said, I must turn aside now and see this marvelous sight, why the bush is not burned up. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here I am. And then he said, Do not come near here. Remove your sandals from your feet, for the place upon which you stand is holy ground. He said also, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And then Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their suffering. So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians, and to bring them up from the land to a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and with honey. Skip down to verse 10. Therefore come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh, so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, and that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? And he said, Certainly I will be with you. Verse 13. Then Moses said to God, Behold, I am going to the sons of Israel, and I will say to them, The God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they will say to me, What is his name, and what shall I say to them? God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, Thus you shall say to the sons of Israel, I am has sent me to you. Sadly, many of us, and I speak general culture, many of us are bored. It's not that we don't have anything to do these days. We have plenty to do. But then again, boredom is not defined by a lack of busyness. Boredom is defined by a lack of purpose. Boredom is defined when your life lacks mission. You see, you can have plenty to do and still be bored. I think that's one of the reasons the video gaming industry is so big. And people become addicted to these games because in and of themselves, these games give us a goal. These games give us a mission. It's a mini mission, M-I-N-I, but it's a mission nonetheless. But it's also a mission without any risk. So I can play a video game and I can become a race car driver. I can become an assassin. I can become a fighter pilot. I can become an angry bird. I can be any of those things. I can do all of that. There's no threat to my well-being. There's no real adventure there. There's no real risk there. It's just entertainment. And sometimes we get obsessed with entertainment because we're so bored. In 1951, an author by the name of Ray Bradbury wrote a book entitled Fahrenheit 451. Like a lot of high school students in my day, I had to read that book. And maybe some of you had to read that book. It was a futuristic look into the modern day. And the premise of Fahrenheit 451 was a modernistic society obsessed with entertainment. And in Fahrenheit 451, the walls of the homes were the televisions. Not that the TV was on the wall, the entire wall was the television. And in Fahrenheit 451, firemen didn't go around putting out fires, they started them. They started them by burning books, because everybody knows books are dangerous. Books have ideas. Books challenge people to think for themselves. But the interesting thing about Fahrenheit 451 was, in this futuristic culture of entertainment, nobody was happy. They just sort of existed. Something was about to destroy them. But they were so busy that they never looked up from their entertainment devices long enough to even notice. Now, you fast forward 70 years, and we have television the size of our walls. And we as a culture binge on entertainment. We carry movies in our pockets. We carry music in our pockets. There's not a second that has to go by that you and I don't have to be entertained. It's easily accessible. And yet, in this entertainment everywhere world, we're still bored. Now, if you're bored, you need something that no Netflix series is going to fix. No video game is going to solve this problem. No addictive app on your phone is going to conquer this. Because if you're bored with life, what you're missing is mission. What you're missing is purpose. What you're missing is to learn how to pour your life into something that's a lot bigger than you are. Something that perhaps you can't grasp the magnitude of it, but you know that there is something out there of which you need, and it is big, it is huge. Something about which you are not just an observer on a screen, but you become an active participant in it. Because, ladies and gentlemen, when God puts us on this earth, we're not playing a game. There's a lot more to it than that. You see, when He created you on purpose. There's not another person like you ever. He created you on purpose. And He created you for purpose. But before you can find your purpose, there's something you have to see. What you have to see is that we serve a God who is not boring. And in the book of Exodus, and in the passage we just read, the great I Am reveals Himself to Moses as the God of the fire. And that's what I want to talk to you about. The God of the fire. And I want to share with you three things about this God that Moses came to know, the God that we must come to know. Three ways that God is like fire. You got something to write with? Write down, let's give you three things. Three things. God is like fire. I want you to think about the parallel. Number one, like fire is both dangerous and attractive. So is the holiness of God. Like fire is both dangerous and attractive, so is God's holiness. We just sang about the fire. We just read about the fire. Let me tell you something about fire. When you see fire, it draws you in. When you see fire, it pulls you in. And yet you understand that if you get too close to the fire, you'll get burned. So therefore, fire that is attractive, that gets your attention and draws you in, is also dangerous. Just like God. Now, I want you to think about Moses. Moses is a lot like us. Moses was busy. Moses had a job. He's busy. But Moses was bored. He was a sheep herder. It's not like he didn't have anything to do. He had a lot to do. He had a job to do. He had a responsibility to fulfill. You see, sheep herding is not exactly an 8-to-5, 5-day-a-week, or 7-day-a-week job. It's all the time. Moses didn't clock in and clock out. That's not how sheep herding went. So Moses did not lack for something to do. Moses, like us, had a lot to do. What Moses lacked, even at age 80, what Moses lacked was mission. What Moses lacked was purpose. And so in verse 2, the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the midst of a bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, and the bush was not consumed. That's how fire works. Fire catches our attention. It catches our eye. And that happened with Moses. And he turns aside to look, to investigate. In verse 4 and verse 5, when the Lord saw that Moses turned aside, he called to him and he said, "Moses, Moses." And Moses answered. And then God said, "Do not come near. Stop." Moses sees the fire. It draws him in. He moves in that direction. And God says, "Stop. Don't come any closer. Or this is holy ground." This is holy ground. We struggle with the word holy. Because automatically, I think, a lot of times, our minds, when we hear the word holy, our mind goes to pretentious. We all understand what it means when someone says he thinks he's holier than thou. We know what that means. But God is different than that. God is other than that. God is set apart, which, by the way, if you get down to the core definition of holiness, that's what it is. It is one who is set apart, and that's God. And so when it comes to God, rather than being holier than thou, with God it is holy art thou. It is the fire of God's holiness that makes him first attractive, but also dangerous. I mean, what happens to something if you throw it into the fire? What happens to it? Somebody says, "Well, it gets burned up, it melts, it's consumed, it's turned to ashes." That's exactly right. And that's why God told Moses, "Stop. Don't come any closer." Because the combination of God's holy fire and your unholy sin will destroy you. It'll kill you. So you better respect it. Anybody here been to the Grand Canyon? Got any visitors to the Grand Canyon? Yeah. I love the little girl. Her parents took her to the Grand Canyon and they gave her a journal and they drove all the way across the country and they said, "Write down stuff you see that impresses you in this journal." And the little girl never wrote anything. Nothing. Until they get to the Grand Canyon. And she looks in the Grand Canyon, she runs back to the car and she writes in her journal like crazy. And that night the parents were curious and so they put her to bed, and they got the journal out. They got to see what she wrote. They opened up the journal, and this is what it said. "Today, I spitted a mile." And if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon, you can spit a mile. Okay. Amazing thing about the Grand Canyon. We go to the Grand Canyon, and when you go to the Grand Canyon, you want to get as close as you can. Nobody goes to the Grand Canyon to just stand way, way back. You want to get up close, you can see it. And it's fun to watch parents with little kids at the Grand Canyon because we have this mindset that there's big guardrails and walls and all that. There's no guardrails at the Grand Canyon. No walls. There are signs, and the signs say, "Parents, hold on to your children. Stop, don't go past this sign. It's dangerous," whatever. And so you see moms and dads, I mean, they've got the hands of their kids or their grandkids because they understand that what is attractive can also be very dangerous. And so you learn to respect it. It's the same with God. As Moses looks at this bush that's not burning, he's mesmerized. And as he gets closer and closer, God says, don't come any closer. Because what is beautiful at the same time can also be very deadly. And that's why there's no such thing as a bored Christian. Not when you see the holiness of God, not when you understand the holiness of God. God is so attractive and at the same time so dangerous, He's not boring. If God is boring, then you've never turned aside to look. If God is boring, you have never come face to face with the fire. Maybe sometimes the problem isn't God, the problem is us. Sometimes we're so obsessed with our entertainment world that we never take our eyes out of the screen to actually notice the world He has made. But I'll tell you what happens. When you lose sense of who God is, you also lose sense of who you are. And when you and I lose sense of who we are, what we in turn do is we try to remake God into our image. And when we remake God into our image, and it happens every time, God gets smaller and smaller and smaller, and we get bigger and bigger and bigger. And then we get perturbed because God's not running the world the way we think it ought to be run. And so rather than being grateful for what we have, we take on an attitude of entitlement. And what we have to understand is it's not about us. It's about Him and His glory. I'll tell you, do this experiment. Next time you go to the Grand Canyon, go out to the edge and stand in front of all of those tourists who are looking at the Grand Canyon. Make sure you get between them and the canyon and look at all of these tourists. And then what I want you to do is I want you to say to all of these tourists who are standing there looking at the Grand Canyon, "Hey, everybody, look at me. Look how great and awesome I am." And they're going to look at you like you're a fool, because nobody goes to the Grand Canyon to see you. They go to the Grand Canyon to see the Grand Canyon. And it's the same with God. It's not about you. It's about God. It's kind of like going to the zoo. Nobody goes to the zoo to see the dachshund exhibit. Did you ever notice that? Nobody goes up to a zookeeper and says, "Hey, where do you keep the dachshunds? You know, the little wiener type dog? Where do you keep the dachshund exhibit?" Nobody goes to the zoo to see the dachshund exhibit. We go to the zoo to see lions and tigers and bears. Why? Because they're dangerous. And we want to get as close to them as we can, but not too close. Because while they are attractive, they are also dangerous. It's the same with God. We're talking about the one who made the sun, the star in the sky so bright, you can't even look at it. You can't gaze upon it. I'm telling you, attractive danger. And this same God who is attractive and danger because of His holiness. We sing the song as we just sang. We ask the same God to light a fire in us because we want to be like Him. So that's the first thing I want to share with you this morning. Like fire is dangerous and attractive, so is the holiness of God. Secondly, like fire is intimate, so is the love of God. Like fire is intimate, so is the love of God. You ever build a campfire? When you build a campfire, it just invites you to pull up a chair and sit and enjoy. There's a sense of coziness with a campfire. There's a sense of warmth and a sense of intimacy. I remember when we adopted our kids, and they were teenagers, and we bring them over to America, and I don't know, a few days go by, and I go out, we have a fire ring out back of our house, and so I build a fire, and I said, "Come on, we're going to have s'mores." And they said, "Some more of what?" I said, "We're going to have s'mores." Well, they had no idea what that was. It made no sense to them until they tasted one. And then they said, "Can we have another one?" And so now that's kind of part of their favorite thing. And so when we think campfire, that's kind of what we think about. And yet the same fire that comforts you and warms you can also kill you. which creates a big problem with God. God is holy, and God is not going to turn down the heat of His holiness to accommodate you. He's not going to make the fire of His holiness less hot, because that's who God is. So how is this going to work? How am I going to be able to come to one who is this holy? How's it going to work? Well, He doesn't change Himself. He's going to change me. And the reason He's going to change me is because He loves me. And so He's going to make a way for me to come to the fire without getting burned. Verse 7. The Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters, for I am aware of their suffering. Now look at verse 8. For I have come down to deliver them. That's interesting. God says, I've come down to deliver them. But ladies and gentlemen, the ultimate God coming down to deliver wouldn't happen until centuries later. In John chapter 1 and verse 1, John says of Jesus, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And verse 14 says, and the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And the same God who says to Moses, you tell them the I am has sent you, is used by Jesus, who said, unless you believe that I am, you will die in your sins. He is the I am. I am the truth. I am the way. I am the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. So how do I get close to God? How do I get intimate with God? Only through Him. Only through Him. And the only way that happened was because He took death for me. He walked into the fire for me and for you. And why? 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 21. That we might become the righteousness of God in Him. Why? 3:16. God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. The point of all of this is how seriously God takes sin. God takes sin so seriously that the only way that you and I can come into the presence of His holiness is through Him. Through the one who is the I Am, who offers forgiveness and salvation and purifying. And an amazing thing happens. When you are cleansed from your sin and you walk into His presence, in a sense, He sets you on fire. Holy fire. And you become the bush. You become the bush that doesn't burn up. Light the fire in my heart today. And the last thing I'll share with you about fire and God is like fire fuels motion. Like fire fuels motion, so is God's power. Your car won't move without power. Your car has to have fuel. But your car also has to have a spark. And when that spark connects with that fuel, there is an explosion motion, and it moves your vehicle. And it was the same with Moses. Moses is running on empty. Moses is kind of doing what we do. Every day it's kind of the same, going through the rigors and the routine of being a sheep herder and going to work and doing all of that. And that was his life. And then suddenly he meets the fire of God. God fills his tank, so to speak, and God lights the spark. And what happened next was explosion motion when God said, I want you to go down to Egypt and I want you to bring my people home. Ladies and gentlemen, God in a sense lit him up. And Moses' life was never the same. Because once you see the fire of God's holiness, once you understand the fire of His love, then the fire of His purpose will explode in your heart. That's the way that works. Remember that passage in Luke 24 and verse 32 with the two men who'd been walking along the road and with this stranger, and they're explaining to him the events of Jerusalem about the death of Jesus and all of that. And finally it was revealed to them that the stranger they walked with was Jesus himself resurrected. And after Jesus was gone, they turned to one another and they said, "There was a fire burning in our hearts as he talked to us." God lit them up. In Acts chapter 2, on the day of Pentecost, with those apostles, tongues as of fire came down upon each one of them. God lit them up. And then God sent them out. And they turned the world upside down. And that should be our prayer. God, light a fire in me. Light a fire in me. You see, God doesn't just save you from something. He saves you to something. After all, we are the church of the living God. We are His people. We're His possession. We're supposed to be the people that God has made holy, holy attractive and holy dangerous. A group of people who are supposed to be on fire. Are we? I tell you, 2020 just kind of put the flame out, didn't it? With a lot of us. And we've got to reignite. Because if there's no fire, there's no mission. And if there's no mission, there's no church. And if there's no church, all that's left is a group of people who get together on a Sunday morning and sing about a fire they wish they had. They don't have it anymore. And so we need to pray, God, light us up. Light us up. You know, in Fahrenheit 451, they went out and burned a bunch of books. God says, this is about a book that I intend to burn you up. I intend for it to light a fire in you. Because, folks, we're not here to be entertained. We're not here to walk around all the time with our heads in screens and to be amused. We have a mission. As Jesus turned to those men, he said, go into all of the world and make disciples of all of the nations. You're talking about explosion motion. That's it. But I'll tell you something. If you're bored, then you've never walked close enough to the fire of a holy God. May God help us to appreciate His holiness. May God help us to appreciate His love. And may God light us up and help us to appreciate the power of the purpose that He has for each one of us. Light the fire in my heart today. We sing the song of invitation. If you're not a Christian, the time to begin your walk with Christ is now. You can keep putting it off and putting it off and putting it off. But what's wrong with right now? At some point you have to make a decision, and if you don't make a decision, you just made one. Why don't you make the decision that will change your life forever and be baptized for the remission of your sins? Can we help you? We would love to do so. Won't you come while we stand and sing?